Whiplash injuries, usually the result of being rear-ended in a motor vehicle accident or presenting a fast-moving breakfast radio program, are the commonest reason for compensation claims, anywhere from 20 to 40%, depending on whether you're talking about cost of claims or numbers. The national cost is probably around $1 billion a year. Well, a treatment trial conducted by the George Institute at the University of Sydney has just been published in the international medical journal The Lancet, and Dr. Norman Swan of RN's Health Report has the details. Good morning, Norman.
Good morning, Ellen.
Thanks for showing up. This raises a basic question. Just what is whiplash?
Well, that's a very good question because nobody's really too sure. It's called whiplash-associated disorders. It can be due to a rear-ended, you know, shunting accident. That's the most common thing, or side-on. And it's where people, where there's a forward and backward or side-to-side movement in the head and neck, and there's neck pain, there can be arm pain, there can be tingling in the arms, and there can be a bit of dizziness as well because all that's linked. And most people get a minor injury, and some people get problems which continue for some time. And the question is how to treat it. And of course, it can be a compensable injury, which complicates it. So as soon as the insurance industry gets involved and starts messing you around about treatment and whether or not you're going to get referred to somebody and whether or not you're actually going to get your money, all that gets perpetuated, as well as the trauma of the actual event itself. So for a while there, they were using collars. You know, half the world was walking around in a collar until they realized that collars make you worse.
Oh, okay.
So you don't use a collar for whiplash, same way as you don't use a back brace for low back pain, because actually it makes you worse. The muscles waste away. It doesn't actually help you rehabilitate. So then the question is, well, what do you do?
Yeah.
Nobody knows the right painkiller to use, so we'll put that to one side, and how much of painkillers to use. So, you know, you've got doctors prescribing diazepam, Valium-like drugs to reduce the muscle spasm with no evidence behind that. And then there's physiotherapy, where people give their physiotherapy to strengthen the neck muscles. So this was a trial of physiotherapy for
whiplash. And how did it go?
Well, what they did was they compared one physiotherapy session, teaching people how to do neck strengthening with a brochure, and a couple of follow-up phone calls a few weeks later. And then they did intensive physio, which is a regular physio, face-to-face with a physiotherapist. And the one session was just as good as the intensive physio.
Ah.
They didn't compare it to nothing. And it's conceivable that nothing is as good as any physio, but they didn't actually have they didn't feel they could actually go that far ethically. But certainly seeing a physio once, getting the exercise, getting a brochure and a couple of follow-up phone calls was enough. You're certainly as good as seeing a physio on a regular basis. But still, after a year, there were still quite a lot of people with pain and discomfort from their whiplash injury. And of course, the x-ray didn't show anything. Some people can get actually a fracture in their neck from a severe whiplash, but that does not mean that everybody needs an x-ray. There are far too many x-rays and CTs being done of people with cervical spine without whiplash, and there are rules for GPs which help them decide who needs a whiplash in an x-ray and a CT scan.
Only one problem springs to mind with the study, and that is that if you're part of a study, you're probably more likely to do your physio as a result of the follow-up phone call, whereas actually going to the physio does have the benefit of getting you to do the exercises, which is probably the biggest problem with it, isn't it?
Yes, except that they were trying to emulate the real world, but it's true of any clinical trial that what they find in a clinical study is not necessarily borne out in the real world. But that may well be as true of the regular physio as of, you might be more attentive to your physiotherapy because you know you're part of a trial. So it could cut both ways. But you're absolutely right. Any clinical trial has to be tested in the real world because the ultimate effects may be less. And in fact, but not of this trial, I mean, interestingly, in April, a huge review of Tamiflu came out, showing which got a hold of the original data in the clinical trials. Fascinating story, where all the clinical, we spent a lot of money in Australia stockpiling Tamiflu in 2019 for the flu pandemic.
It was more popular than a show bag at the exhibition.
20 randomised trials, but company funded. And when they dug down and got the raw data out, very few, if any, in fact, none of the claims of the drug manufacturer bore out. We wasted our money on the drug drug stockpile. So it's not just do the randomized trials bear out in real life, do the randomized trials, particularly pharmaceuticals, bear out when you look at the raw data? In this case, no.
Fascinating. Thank you so much for coming in, Dr. Norman Swan of RN's Health Report, and more at 5:30 on this network this afternoon.